This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time.
Hello.
We're back.
These
2 weeks roll around very quickly, don't they?
Do they? Or did that 2 weeks was in lockdown? So I feel like that stretched like something stretchy. I did not know it was August. Really?
Yeah. Fresh into August.
We are.
It's nice to be out of lockdown. The less said about that. Probably
yeah.
The better.
Love to everyone else who is still in it. We feel your pain.
Key questions. Is my skin glowing?
Oh my gosh, you did it.
I know I did it. So we should not be talking about diet things because we have no professional.
We have no, I did think about that last week when we talked about the juice cleanse. I was like, oh my gosh, our listeners are going to think that we are juice cleanse people and we're not. It's like, you know, when you do juice cleanses, ironically, that's us, right? But you went and did it. So did my sister at the same time, by the way.
Did
so
she?
We should have put a bloody code on. We could have been like.
We should.
Anyway, we're not doing that.
Oh my God.
How did you feel?
I will never do one again. I think the main thing I learned was I freaking hate juice.
It's a lot of fluid, isn't it? And it's very cold at this time of year.
It's really cold. I won't do it again. I felt very good the day after the juice cleanse. I must admit, I felt
Did you get that like kind of
amazing
clarity, which as people have said to me is a little bit of starvation, ketosis happening, but it's clear, right?
It was, yeah. It coincided though. So we came out of lockdown and I had the 3-day juice cleanse Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I had 3 days of in-person training, those 3 days. And it was the first full-time week of work I've worked in 10 years or something.
Was it in-person training as in like real humans in the room?
In the room with about 30 strangers, which I am not even sure was COVID friendly,
with
to be honest.
On?
With masks on the whole time.
Oh my
but
gosh.
Still.
Juice and masks and people.
It was,
I was
the most unfriendly person you have. Like, because normally you sort of bond over the cakes and the meal, but I was avoiding that table.
That was one of the things that I believe there is on the website, Catherine, is it says you need to really plan your time. That was not a good time.
It was ill-timed. If I could have, I did say to Carney, do you want to do a one-day cleanse, trying to palm a day off, but
I take it. You're just going to give him the last day.
Yeah. If I could have done it with kids, I probably would have.
That's so funny.
But that's
okay. There you go. There is Catherine's straight-up review of the juice cleanse. It did not work for her.
Never again.
Never again.
Now, that's all a big digression. You are on a massive high from reading a great book.
Let me just, some of you have already seen me gush. I gushed on Instagram and I don't often gush. I often am quite a bit behind. In fact, there's some books that I haven't put up on Instagram yet just because I get behind in my reading. But I actually posted about this book while I was still crying, Catherine, because I thought the only way that I can fully communicate my feelings about this book are to do it like while it's right here, right now, really raw. So the book is this one. It's called Great Circle. It's by Maggie Shipstead, who I now know everything about because I did a deep dive all weekend. And I want to say I'd put it on hold at the library and maybe it was Claire Nichols who reviewed it. I don't know if she talked to Maggie, but I was interested in this idea of a whole book that kind of looks at the concept of scale, right? So I got it because of that. Then while I had it on order,
scale.
It was coming in scale as in depth and perception, like the scale of the world and scale in paintings and things like that. I was just interested in that. And then while I was waiting for it to come in at the library, it got longlisted for the Booker Prize and suddenly became hot property. So I'm so glad that I got it. I read it in a weekend. It's nearly 600 pages. So that gives you a bit of a sense. And, you know, I also did parenting and all the other things that I do on a weekend. So it gives you a bit of a sense of how much time I had to just keep on sneaking away to keep reading it.
Scale of your investment.
Yeah. And it's just, it's blown my mind. I was deeply immersed in the novel, in the story of it, as well as being able to have like that one kind of writerly side of my brain looking down and observing and going, how on earth did she do that? I want to know.
So, I mean, that's quite conceptual, isn't it? But it's a story.
It's a story about a woman called Marion Graves, who is an aviatrix who wants to fly around the world, and it is encompassed within another narrative about a movie star living in contemporary LA who is playing the role of Marion Graves, the aviatrix, in a biopic about her. It's wow. So good. I hope that the tone of my voice, listeners, you can get in touch with us and tell us if the tone of my voice is adequately describing to you how much I've been moved and inspired by this book.
So if the tone of your voice doesn't fully convey that, you have also managed, and this is testament to your skills in what I'm not going to call networking, but no. I'm going to call friend making.
Yep.
You have now landed an interview.
I have landed an interview for the first time podcast with New York Times bestselling and book along listed Maggie Shipstead. It will be coming to you before the end of the season. Do you know how I did it?
Yeah, this is what I want to know. I'm going to follow this formula.
So it's really funny too, because, and for any new listeners we have from RMIT Inside the Industry, who I spoke to last week and said, you know, this is what we're doing, self-promoting, networking. They are not dirty words. This is what we're doing now, okay? We're sliding into DMs. We're doing all the stuff. I sent her a message on Instagram.
Is Instagram the only one that you use the term DM for? Is that used for Twitter as well?
Yeah, I think it's used for Twitter. I don't know. Okay. I get these things wrong all the time, but same principle, right?
I always associate it with Instagram. But anyway,
message,
carry on.
Maybe message. You know, I think it's DM on Twitter. Someone can correct us on that. So I had, I don't know if these things make a difference, but if someone was going to like analyze what I did, I had posted a couple of times about the book in my stories while I was reading it. I had already started following Maggie Shipstead, knew she was on Instagram when I heard the interview about the book. I was interested then. So I was following her. At one stage, she liked one of the stories. So I like knew that she was a live, you know, author who was engaged in the world of Instagram.
Mean she followed you back, or she
no,
maybe
she
followed
didn't follow
her
me
own
back.
Hashtag. Okay.
No, I tagged her. I tagged her.
Oh, of course. Yes.
I tagged her. Yep. So she saw that. And then when I finished, I sent her a message to say how moved I was by the book, how much I enjoyed it, and like a kind of off the cuff wish list, if you were ever keen, love to interview you for our podcast.
Oh.
I also sent the very professional email that we would send when we were inviting someone to the podcast to her publicist. And I mentioned in the DM that I would get in touch with her publicist, so it didn't really matter if she got back to me, you know, like if she didn't want to. Whatever,
yeah.
That I was
oh, this
going
is a
the
great,
professional
like,
way.
Triangulated approach.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make sure that I had covered the options. But I must admit, I was really not expecting to hear back. But my whole family realized my investment so much in this book because I was walking around weeping and telling them all about it all the time, that when I did indeed wake up to a message from Maggie Shipstead saying, I'd love to be on your podcast, no worries. Here's my email. I did leap in the air. I did leap in the air.
Oh,
so
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a formula to it, but it's a fairly authentic formula at the same time, isn't it?
Well, it's authentic because I actually think, and I know this is what we're kind of going to talk about today, but it's, you know, sometimes books arrive in your hands at the right time for a good reason. And this book has like opened up to me the possibility of what the book that I'm currently working on could be at a time where that is useful, a time where there is space in my head to think and shift in the book that I'm writing. And for that, I am both profoundly grateful and also want to know every single thing about how this author works and how they did what they did.
So is that the variety of help that it's offering is a structural?
It's structural and character-based and, so much about it at a technical level. I also think there's this, extraordinary confidence in it. And it's like a confidence, and I've actually just been listening to an interview with her, and I believe it went, it's at about 600 pages now, and it was reduced by one quarter between the last, the one, you know, the one that she kind of sold and this. So it was bigger than this. And there is a sense that even though it's kind of like an epic, there's a great faith in the reader to pick up what's going on without explaining everything. And I think that that confidence, this is her third novel, that confidence is quite extraordinary. It's something that's like a tonal quality that I think, you know, you can't just make that happen in your own work. But I think you can try and create the right conditions for that confidence to happen, if that makes sense.
That you can. I think also you have to write the 800 words to be able to pull it out, don't
yeah,
you? Like absolutely. It has to exist somewhere. Yeah. You can't yeah. start with that level of trust.
No, absolutely not. It is a process. So that is what I have been reading and what is helping me right now. Do you, Catherine Collette, have a book that had such a profound impact that helped you in your writing along the way?
I think for the competition, there were two books that really helped, and they're kind of quite similar. One I've mentioned before is one that Robert Lukens randomly sent me, which was very, very nice of him. That's the Toastmasters Treasure Chest Volume 2. And the other is the Oxford Book of Aphorisms.
Oh my hang on. Could just back up a second, because I remember you mentioning that Robert Lukens sent you this book, like just knew that you were writing about Toastmasters from when we interviewed him.
I must have mentioned it when he came in and we interviewed him, and he was cleaning up his garage, and it's a pretty random book. Like,
Oh my God, I love that so much.
I mean, I imagine there are a few people for whom this book would be hugely desirable, but it's just a book. The one that Robert gave me is published in the 1970s, and it's a book for speech makers, and it's just quotes from different things. And it's categorized interestingly. It's sort of a almost a thesaurus-like system where they number the quote, and then they have an index that sort of cross-references in multiple ways.
Have you got it marked up? Is there a favorite one?
I don't have a favorite one, but I will have to put acknowledgements in this book, because there's lots of books like that I've really relied on. I think because the book is around a lot of speeches. So
yes, that's so good.
And because it had multiple points of view. So I think one cool thing about quotes is that you might have, what's one here? You know, true and, you know, truth might be a theme. You could have 10 different people's beautifully succinct or witty or clever way of talking about the truth, which is a great jumping off point for
That's brilliant.
Point of view. Yeah, like it's less structural. It's so much more on the line.
Can I just jump in here just to make sure our listeners know, I have not yet read this book. I've heard like maybe a couple of scenes read aloud in during writer's retreats, and I haven't read it. And I don't know how far in advance of any of you out there I will get to read it. So I'm just saying, Catherine, at any time you want to just shoot it across, you know, I'm here. There is quite a pile, but it will obviously go to the top.
Carry on. It's being typeset at the moment. That's a good moment. Now, the other book that was ace was Starter for 10, which David Nichols, I think, is the author of that. He wrote One Fine Day and a few other books like that.
Yeah.
What is cool about that book is, so my book, The Competition, has a competition that has multiple stages, but you're doing a similar sort of thing at each stage, which is similar to Starter to 10. So what it was useful for was that, how did you handle repetition of an event that is got to be competitive in each phase, but has also got to escalate and still be interesting the third time they're giving
speeches? I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that that is sometimes when you're looking for, they're not comparative titles in that way, but they're like models. They're kind of models. When you tell emerging writers or people who are asking for help, you say like what you want is a model for the structure, or a model for exactly that, how this writer successfully did this very particular thing. I think that's really useful.
Which is so, like, our writers group seems to do that quite a bit, particularly lately.
Yeah.
Where one of them will say, what's a book that's got alternating first and third person, and one of them's really dead, or that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very useful. Brains trust.
Brains Trust. Have you got another book? What else has been influential?
You know, what's really interesting is that I just found this list, so I thought that I would share it because one of the things that I'm doing in my PhD is that I'm going...
Oh, God! We're going to have a spin-off series of like...
We are not. It's okay. I'll get you... I'm only 2 weeks in, all right? I'll stop talking about it.
You get about a year's grace, I think.
Yeah, no, maybe 3 weeks. But I am... I'm going back through my journals because they're really useful and because they are... You know, I'm kind of trying to pull out some patterns about creative process that are in there. And one of the things that I found is this exercise that Charlotte gave me during the mentorship, where she asked me to list a series of aspirational books or some aspirational books, she said. So this is at, the date is October 2018. So I'm kind of like, you know, I had a draft, I'd had the kind of crash and burn. And so I knew what I was doing, but these were books that I really wanted to aspire. So not necessarily comparative titles, but books that I wanted to aspire to. And I've sometimes given this exercise to other people, and I think it was incredibly helpful. And it's kind of very, it's interesting and moving maybe to look back at the list now to see how well, I achieved those things. So I do recommend this. So the idea is that you, at any stage in your process, that you kind of just write down this list of books that might be in any way what you are striving towards. So this is what I had. This is the list that I had in October 18.
Oh, this is cool. I'm excited.
Yeah. And also, I didn't necessarily have to share it with Charlotte, and you'll understand why, very embarrassingly, because obviously I listed one of her books as in that list too. So I had, I Want the Mother Fault to Be, as allegorical as Charlotte Wood's The Natural Way of Things, as sexy as Amar McBride's The Lesser Bohemians, as pacey as Jane Harper's The Dry, as wild and unfamiliar, which was a quote from somewhere, and brave as George Saunders' Lincoln in the Bardo, as precise and beautiful and new in language as Zana Freeland's The Bone Sparrow, with children as respected and richly imagined as in Romy Ash's Floundering, a love letter to place like Winton would do, with underlayers and metaphors like in Sophie Cunningham's Geography, and inviting readers to self-reflect, ask questions, or reflect on the world we live in as in Mohsin Hamid's Exit West or Jane Rawson's From the Wreck.
Oh my God, I love that.
It's like a crazy list of books, right? Like, but they were the books that, so yeah, so when you
ask
the question.
I can see those books.
Well,
though.
That's good. Like, I'm glad. And that's why looking back on it, I was like, oh yeah, maybe I did do that. But it was a beautiful activity because it wasn't, so often we think about those models as something more kind of similar to our book. And those books are not similar to my book in content or structure necessarily or genre, but it was a really good exercise. So there you go. That's my list.
It also just highlights the things you think are important in a piece of work, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that tension alongside, you know, wildness or...
Yeah, exactly. Other inspo for you?
I listened to, this is what my mum recommended actually, on the Conversations, ABC's Conversations podcast, Ash Barty's mindset coach, Ben Crowe.
Oh my God, I heard him on the radio. No, but I heard him on the radio and I was like, I need to know more about this guy. Tell me more. I haven't listened to this yet.
I feel like, then I started Googling him and maybe he's everywhere, but this particular episode is great. I think it comes, maybe it's June or something like that. Okay. And it's Sarah Kanowski that interviews him. Ben Crowe has coached an incredible lineup of people. So lots of sports people, Ash Barty, Richmond Football Club, also goes to Russia and talks to their top 500 CEOs.
Wow.
Weird to think of Russian CEOs.
Well, I don't know why, but yes, I see this.
Yeah. Really good interview about having goals, but focusing on the things that you can control. So you can't, you know, in the context of tennis, you can't control the weather, you can't control what your opponent is going to do, but you can control your attitude, how you respond, how much you commit to training, all that sort of stuff. So really good on that. So many good bits in this. Another that I will completely bastardize in the retelling is that you look at really happy memories from childhood and attach keywords to the memory. So things like feeling loved, feeling freedom, feeling joy, relaxedness, these kinds of things. And then when you're in moments of tension or where you're worried about distraction, the idea is that you come back to those keywords and to that feeling.
Wow.
It's really, really interesting. So much good stuff in it. We could have a whole discussion just about the concepts within it. Also, fabulous just to listen to Sarah Kanowski interview someone.
She's such a star. She's my pinup girl.
She, and I know you've said that before, but this particular interview, she's just great questions. She also talks to Ben about his father's death, which is quite moving, and is something that had a really big impact on his life. He starts crying, or, you know, tears up.
Yeah.
The way that she balances respect and awkwardness, or just letting that moment be, but also exploring it without seeming like predatory, or do you know what I mean? Like giving it a real respect and giving, like, such really artistically done. Just
wow. Yeah. I'm going to listen to that immediately.
Incredible.
We will put links to all of these things. You know what? I think I actually stayed in the car. I was listening to him. I think Raf Epstein, someone was interviewing him like just after Ash Barty won Wimbledon. Yep. And he said one of the things that is really important is that he talks about every point having the same weight.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's when I thought I need to listen to this guy more, because he kind of, you know, talked about ways that you could, take that approach in all different aspects of life. But, you know, that last point is not any different in weight to Ash Barty when she's performing at her best than is the first point. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
It's good. I think he's just released an app that you can subscribe to. I'm going to check his app.
So you're going to say he's just released a book, because when he does, let's get him on the podcast.
Exactly. I will utilize the Instagram
technique. You can do that. Slide into his DMs, Catherine.
One nice thing he said, though, was that, he does a lot of work with teams and a lot of work with individuals, and saying it can be easier working with teams to create a mindset, kind of a positive mindset. But it made me think of this podcast, like the fact that because this is like a team sport, and it's so much easier to have resilience, or to, like, the frame that you give that is so different to the frame that you give one, like, solo pursuits.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's true. I'm taking notes. There's a lot of episodes in this. We can really get some mileage.
Okay, interviews with people. Is there someone that you've heard, an author, creative type, that was pivotal to you?
I think, and I know I talk about it all the time, but I do think that George Saunders interview, I think it's with Michael Williams for Sydney Writers Festival, I can't remember what year, I listen to it all the time, and in it he talks about...
I have still not listened to that.
That glass, dropping the glass, the perfect glass sphere of your novel, and then the process being putting it back together. And I just, it's my image, because it's such an easy image to hold in your head. It's my image when the going gets tough, as it sometimes does. It's my image, because I'm like, this thing is perfect and whole, and I may not get to represent the perfect whole of the glass sphere that I first imagined, but my job is the work of putting it back together, not reimagining the sphere, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, interesting.
Yeah.
Wonder what shape your glasses would be.
Oh my God, the meat glass at the moment. Did you have some...
Yeah, some cool things.
Some cool
things.
Should
we do a roundup?
Let's do a roundup. Before we go?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
We'll keep going tit for tat. Newsletters, because I love them. I unsubscribed from all, like, the Country Road, you know, all that stuff.
I've been doing a lot of unsubscribing too.
Exclusively getting newsletters, which is ace. Lauren Chatter, author of Gulliver's Wife, has a newsletter. Have you signed up to this?
No, I haven't yet, but I need to. Does she talk about her amazing circus work in it? Because that is
what?
Do you not follow her on Instagram?
I follow her on Instagram. I've never seen anything circusy.
Oh my gosh. She like hangs up. Lauren, can you send Catherine some things? Her. Yeah. Of what she does. She like does upside down hoop things. Amazing. She's amazing.
For exercise?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Maybe she also performs in a circus. Whatever. It looks really cool. Sorry, okay, I interrupted.
So she has a new newsletter. The August issue is framed around her book. You can sign up on her website. This, to me, is a great example of the type of newsletter that works if you have a book coming out, particularly if you've done research. It's all kind of backstories, interviews with people, relevant to the book.
Oh, my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, but just interesting and absorbing standalone. Yeah.
Are you going to do that?
I don't know if I have enough back stories. I think this book is historical fiction, that is her book, The Winter Dress. I don't know. I don't know if I have that, if it would work as well.
Interesting. Okay. Mm. Carry on. Other newsletters? I need to other up newsletters, my newsletter game.
Anna Waitley and Kaker's The Overshare.
I think I've mentioned this before.
Yeah, I actually went on to Twitter to say how good it is.
It's amazing. When Catherine comes on Twitter, everyone should like wave at her madly and respond to her.
Oh, God. Twitter's hard, though. It's such a...
You're going to have to get back on the horse before your new book comes out, all right? I'm going to get you on there gently, slowly.
Well, I'm interviewing Pip Williams this week of the Dictionary of Lost Words. Mm-hmm. She's not on Twitter.
It's true, she's not. I know this because she's my new best friend, remember? Can't believe you get to interview her. But that's okay. Yeah, she's not on Twitter, it's true. Neither's Meg Mason.
Yeah, well, you can not be on those things when you've sold 10 gazillion, million, thousand copies. Anyway, the Overshare, great newsletter, entertaining, gives a lot of insight to neurodivergence and the tiny ways it impacts people's lives.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Newsletter time. Sign up.
Remember our short-lived newsletter?
I do.
We've tried a lot of things, haven't we?
We have. Remember, it's all about experimentation. On that, we should do a live again soon, shouldn't we?
We should. I now have a ring light, so it won't just be half of my face as I stare worriedly at the camera.
We'll be doing that sometime soon. We'll let people know so that you can get on and ask us a bunch of questions. Follow us on the socials to find out the time that we'll do such a thing. You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.